Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 21, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ghana's president calls for reparation for slavery.
No amount of money will ever make up for the horrors, but it would make the point that evil was perpetrated, that millions of productive Africans were snatched from the embrace of our continent and put to work in the Americas and the Caribbean.
Liberia's president promises free, fair, and credible elections in October. Rwandan President Paul Kagame will seek a fourth term in 2024. Africa managing geopolitical challenges with resilience and economic opportunities. Guinea's military junta is accused of misdirecting millions of dollars. Today is the International Day of Peace.
Sustainable peace can be built over time through the practice of good governance, good leadership, and all these factors need to be looked at. If I think all these countries were to focus on just empowering their populations, peace and security will be attained.
And Zimbabwe's business community says the use of a local currency in the country would be disastrous. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ghanaian President Nana Akufo-Addo says he has been authorized by the African Union to hold a global conference in November on reparations for slavery. Speaking Wednesday at the 78th UN General Assembly in New York, Akufo-Addo said that the world should not forget that present-day socioeconomic conditions of Africa have their roots in historical injustices. He said it was time for the world to openly acknowledge that much of Europe and the United States was built from the vast wealth harvested from the sweat, tears, and blood of the transatlantic slave trade.
It is time to acknowledge openly that much of Europe and the United States have been built from the vast wealth harvested from the sweat, tears, blood, and horrors of the transatlantic slave trade and the centuries of colonial exploitation. Maybe we should also admit that it cannot be easy to build confident and prosperous societies from nations that for centuries have their natural resources looted and their peoples traded as commodities. For centuries, the world has been unwilling and unable to confront the realities of the consequences of the slave trade. But gradually, and it is time to bring the subject of reparations firmly to the fore. Granted, the current generations are not the ones that engage in the slave trade. But that grand inhuman enterprise was state-sponsored and deliberate, and its benefits are clearly interwoven with the present-day economic architecture of the nations that designed and executed it. Reparations must be paid for the slave trade. No amount of money will ever make up for the horrors, but it would make the point that evil was perpetrated, that millions of productive Africans were snatched from the embrace of our continent and put to work in the Americas and the Caribbean without compensation for their labor. If there are any hesitations in some minds about the paying of reparations, it is worth considering the fact that when slavery was abolished, the slave owners were compensated for the loss of the slaves because the human beings were labeled as property, deemed to be commodities. Surely, this is a matter that the world must confront and can no longer ignore. The African Union has authorized Ghana to hold a global conference on the issue in November in Accra.
That was Ghanaian President Nana Akufo-Addo speaking Wednesday at the ongoing 78th UN General Assembly in New York. Liberian President George Weah says his government has taken all necessary measures to ensure that the October 10 presidential elections would be free, fair, transparent, peaceful, inclusive, and credible. Addressing the 78th UN General Assembly, Weah said his government has strengthened the National Elections Commission to ensure it operates without due influence. This follows reports of campaign-related violence ahead of the elections. Weah said political parties have signed a memorandum of understanding committing themselves to a non-violent electoral process.
The October polls will mark the fourth peaceful general elections in Liberia since the end of the Civil War in 2003. This 78th session is taking place at a time when my country is preparing for the first election since the withdrawal of the UN peacekeeping presence from Liberia. The October 10 election is an opportunity to sustain the gains made in our reconstruction and development processes. Mr. President, Excellency, distinguished ladies and gentlemen, the government of Liberia has taken all necessary measures to ensure a free, fair, transparent, peaceful, inclusive, and credible elections. The National Election Commission has been strengthened to ensure that it operates without undue influence. In addition, political parties have committed themselves to a non-violent electoral process by signing the 2023 Farmington Ribbon Declaration, which obligates all actors in the elections to continue to promote peace. As a strong believer in democracy, let me reiterate my call for the respect of constitutional governance and respect for the will of the people. While addressing the issues of elections and democracy, permit me to congratulate all democratically elected leaders around the world.
Liberian President George Weah was speaking Wednesday at the ongoing 78th UN General Assembly in New York. A leading global risk consultancy says that despite the impacts of the war in Ukraine, global inflation, climate, and security challenges, Africa continues to find resilience. A new report by Control Risks and its economics consulting partner, Oxford Economics Africa, finds that as global tensions create disruptions, they are also providing many African governments significant political, economic, and security opportunities. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
The research, released on Tuesday, examines how African countries, governments, and corporations navigate a world marked by global tension and competition for resources and alliances, particularly among China, Russia, and the United States. The researchers focus on African states' efforts to retain neutrality while under pressure to join with global geopolitical corporations. Patricia Rodriguez, a senior analyst at Control Risks, a firm specializing in political, security, and integrity risks, says Africa is attracting investment from various countries vying for support and access to the continent's economic opportunities.
What we've seen from major geopolitical actors, be that the US, China, Russia, or the EU as a bloc, everybody's increasingly viewing Africa as a place where they can entice to either align with them on key geopolitical or global affairs. And in doing so, there's a lot of at least pledged investment that is being directed towards the continent.
During the U.S.-Africa summit in December, Washington committed to allocate $55 billion to Africa over the next 3 years, focusing on healthcare, trade, climate change, and women's issues. Recent reduced U.S. involvement in Africa has created opportunities for China, which has invested $10 billion in the continent from 2017 to 2022, and has also led to increased trade between Africa and Russia, growing from $9 billion in 2013 to $17.7 billion in 2021. These three major global powers compete to secure access to Africa's mineral resources, which are critical in advancing new technologies. Africa holds almost one-third of the world's mineral reserves and 8 and 12% of global gas and oil reserves. Vincent Roche is the head of Control Risk. He says the demand for African mineral wealth has also created the urge to industrialize in the continent.
And so what we have seen in the last few months is more assertive moves by various countries to try to make sure that this surge in interest also benefits their economies. And we're seeing what you could call a critical resource nationalism coming back in some economies where we see an insistence on local processing, more stringent local content requirements, and generally an attempt to integrate these critical mineral supply chain with a broader drive for industrialization.
In most African countries, natural capital accounts for between 30% to 50% of their overall wealth. The continent loses $195 billion yearly of its natural capital due to illicit financial flows, illegal mining, logging, the illegal trade in wildlife, unregulated fishing and environmental damage. Researchers say North African countries are positioning themselves as manufacturing destinations as Western countries are looking to disengage from China. The head of Africa Macro at Oxford Economics Africa, Jacques Neal, says African countries will face challenges in an increasingly competitive global environment.
We continue to see progress. You know, it wasn't a short-term boost to access to financial services that we've seen. We continue to see the expansion and access to financial services improve across the continent, which is really important because, secondly, this is a catalyst for broader economic growth. You know, access to financial services is required and supports economic growth in most, if not all, other sectors of the economy.
According to researchers, wars on the continent are receiving little attention from the international community. Although it is affecting the continent and attracting external actors such as Wagner and terror organizations. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Thursday, September 21st. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The Independent International Commission on Inclusive Peace has called on the international community to prioritize and resolve conflicts that have gripped the eastern part of Africa. Moses Havyarimana has the story.
As the world today celebrates the annual International Day of Peace, Sudan, Somalia, and Democratic Republic of Congo are still engulfed in prolonged conflicts. Bert Koenders is the Netherlands' former Minister of Foreign Affairs and current co-chair of Principles for Peace Initiative Commission.
I'm very worried and concerned with the situation in Sudan. I think it should be on the top of the agenda of the General Assembly taking place now in New York. The situation in the Great Lakes, in which there is enormous tension, recently in Goma. And I again would call on the urgency of this, of the importance of negotiations at different levels.
The violence in Sudan began on 15 April this year, which was sparked by a power struggle between the leaders of the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces. This conflict displaced more than 3.3 million people. The Democratic Republic of Congo is another East African country that has been hit with conflicts for more than a decade. Gideon Gakpan is an East African Legislative Assembly lawmaker from South Sudan.
It is highly important that both South Sudan and Democratic Republic of Congo work towards establishing indigenous solutions to restore trust and confidence among the communities. We don't expect to import solutions from outside because they can't address completely the challenges to our context.
Abdullah Ibrahim is a Nairobi-based governance and development expert. He says that prolonged conflicts are a result of lack of financing and education among African societies.
Sustainable peace can be built over time through the practice of good governance, good leadership, and all these factors need to be looked at. If I think all these countries were to focus on just empowering their populations and educating them, peace and security will be attained.
As the United Nations General Assembly is being held in New York, the UK's Minister of State Development and Africa said via his X account, formerly known as Twitter, that a meeting was held on Tuesday between the UK, Saudi Arabia, the United States and the United Arab Emirates. Together, they are working on efforts to defuse the Sudan conflict that has resulted in the loss of thousands of lives. Moses Havyarimana for Voice of America.
Rwandan President Paul Kagame said this week that he plans to run for In 2024, Kagame told the French language magazine Jeune Afrique on Tuesday that he was happy with the confidence Rwandans have in his leadership. He has been in power since 2000 and changed the constitution in 2015 to change term limits. Human rights groups accuse him of suppressing his political opponents and the media. Gatete Nyirigambo is a human rights lawyer and political blogger in Kigali. He tells me that Rwandans have been expecting the announcement because they say Kagame has a positive track record on the economy.
This is something that we expected. We expected this, especially when the party this year designated him as chairman again.
What is the view of the people of Rwanda?
At the last party congress, they designated him as the leader of the party, chairman again. And that was a signal that he was going to run for president. It was just a matter of time before he could admit that he's going to run again.
As I read the article, the president said that he's doing the will of the people and they would like for him to run.
You know, he has a very positive track record, right? So lives of people have improved, unemployment has reduced, and so on. So people are keen to have him run again.
Now, how would you describe democracy in Rwanda? Where is the opposition?
Right. So the opposition in Rwanda is weak because the ruling party, the RPF, it's a party that describes itself as a family, or I don't know how to translate it in English, but it's something like a family. And then so what happens as a result is that anyone who's smart, they offer him a job, even if they don't agree with him. So now the thing is, people, as a result, what calls itself the opposition are twofold. There is one group that is in parliament, as in government, that calls itself opposition. And there are people who fled Rwanda who call themselves opposition. But these, some of them have been sentenced, but all in all, there are no people who present strong alternatives against him. That's mainly why, because other people, it's not like we don't have many people who can run, but all the people who are capable to run to oppose him do support him. It's the people who can't, who have been sentenced, people who have fled the country because they had issues with the law, are the people who call themselves opposition, but they don't have a following.
Of course, it can be said that, and as some human rights groups have said, that the reason that it doesn't seem that there is a viable opposition is because of the policy of Mr. Kagame against the opposition.
So you have two people. I'll give you an example. So you have a woman called Victoire Ingabire, who opposes Kagame, opposes the RPF. This woman's husband has been sentenced for genocide. Her mother is a genocide perpetrator, sentenced by courts. Eh? Mother, father, and husband. And on first time when she came to Rwanda, she said, this memorial of genocide only has Tutsi, where are the Hutus? So immediately she was accused of genocide revisionism and she was arrested and so on. That's who we have for opposition. She hasn't come up with economic ideas, migration ideas, agriculture, peace, stability, security, any developmental idea. She's into ethnicity.
Gatete Nyirigambo is a human rights lawyer and political blogger. He was speaking with us from Kigali, Rwanda. The Zimbabwe business community says the use of a local currency in the country will be disastrous and therefore recommends the continued use of dollars, rands, and others. From Harare, Rutendo Manwere has the story.
Speaking at a meeting Tuesday, convened by the Zimbabwe Minister of Trade and Commerce, chairman of the CEO Africa Roundtable, Oswobina, said the use of several currencies should go beyond the stipulated time frame that is mentioned in the National Development Strategy 1.
Whilst the NDS 1 places a cap on the 2025 mark, the end of multi-currencies, in Zimbabwe, monetary economists and business sector leadership believe the country is not yet ready for a Zimbabwe dollar mono currency. Zimbabwe's current crisis can be checked by extending multi-currency usages up to 2030.
Kurai Macheza is the president of the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries.
We know 2025 has been set as the timeline at which the multi-currency system will end, but we need to create and follow through a clear roadmap of what it is that we want to do as a country to address the current issue. If we just rush it, it may cause other dislocations in the economy.
Zimbabwe introduced the use of multi-currencies in 2019 after inflation had eroded the local currency. Macheza expressed concern over the government's preference to collect some taxes in foreign currency.
The government is the best promoter of the local currency. So the bulk of the taxes must actually be demanded in Zim dollars so that the government can encourage the use and defend the local currency.
Bina says that government debt has been a hindrance in securing investment from outside the country.
The CEO of Africa Roundtable does investment missions, and part of the feedback that comes from these investment missions is the issue of the national debt, particularly as we discuss government guarantee.
The Minister of Industry and Trade, Stembiso Nyoni, said she had taken note of the concerns by business leaders and would be consulting with other government ministries, adding that her responsibility is to promote the development of a vibrant, sustainable and globally competitive industrial and commercial enterprises. Reporting for VOA Africa, this is Rutendo Mawere Narare.
Guinea's military junta leader Mamadou Doumbouya has been accused of misdirecting $75 million. The money came from the Chinese mining company Winnie for the extraction of iron ore on Simandou in the southeastern part of the country. The junta leader was accused by the Senegalese news magazine Dakar Times. Reporter Karim Kamara has more on the story from Conakry.
The news has been a topic of discussion everywhere, with many expressing astonishment. The government has long been tight-lipped on the issue, but as public anger continued to grow, the Minister of Interior, Mori Konde, finally broke his silence. Konde confirms that the amount was indeed paid to the government by the company Winning Consortium Simandou and placed in the state treasury. He says $75 million was paid to the government and the amount which exists in the amended financial year can be verified. He says those who say the money does not exist should check their information and that the amount is part of this year's budget. Sources at the Ministry of Mines told VOA that the agreement between Winning Mining Company and the Guinean state was signed in 2020 by the government of former President Alpha Conde, and the total amount is $100 million. According to the same source, the $75 million was an advance payment made in 2020 shortly after the coup and was paid to the junta. The minister explains where the money went. He says the $75 million were paid into the account of the public treasury, which can be verified. He says the issue is becoming a topic of much misinformation. He says for now, the remaining amount of $102,000 has not yet been paid by the company. But the question many here are asking is why is it now that the government is confirming the payment since 2021? When a foreign news outlet had unveiled the secret. Some have described the minister's declaration as baseless and unfounded. Isiega Bangura, a student, said all they want to know is where exactly the money is.
He
says with help of the Senegalese media, they were able to know that the $75 million that was paid since 2021. He says all that the minister has said is not true, and they want to know where the money has gone.
The revelations have led to accusations of widespread corruption against members of the military government, leading to a drop in the junta's popularity. Kadetu Conte, a teacher, says they will not accept fraudulent behavior by the junta. She says members of the junta only came to power to enrich themselves at the expense of Guineans, and that this will not work at all.
Some accuse members of the junta of seizing power to enrich themselves. They are accused of doing nothing to meet the promises made after seizing power. Members of civil society and other interest groups say in the coming days they plan protest against what they call the mishandling of the population. Reporting for VOA Africa, I am Karim Kamara in Conakry.
And that's it for this Thursday, September 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Botting, Washington, saying have a great day and please be safe whatever you do.